Chapter 9. Dorset greeted the Sally with delight.
Oh, oh, abominably you've just hit it keeps me awake at night. The doctors tell me that's what has knocked my digestion out being so infernally jealous of her. I can't eat a mouthful of this stuff, you know, he added suddenly, pushing back his plate with a clouded countenance. And Lily, unfailingly adaptable, accorded a radiant attention to his prolonged denunciation of other people's cooks, with a supplementary tirade on the toxic qualities of melted butter. It was not often that he found so ready an ear, and, being a man as well as a dyspeptic, it may be that as he poured his grievances into it, he was not insensible to its rosy symmetry. At any rate, he engaged Lily so long that the sweets were being handed when she caught a phrase on her other side, where Miss Corby, the comic woman of the company, was bantering Jack Stepney on his approaching engagement. Miss Corby's role was jocularity. She always entered the conversation with a handspring. And of course you'll have Sim Rosedale as best man. Lily heard her fling out as the climax of her prognostications. And Stepney responded, as if struck colon Jove, that's an idea. What a thumping present I'd get out of him. Sim Rosedale. The name, made more odious by its diminutive, obtruded itself on Lily's thoughts like a leer. It stood for one of the many hated possibilities hovering on the edge of life. If she did not marry Percy Grice, the day might come when she would have to be civil to such men as Rosedale. If she did not marry him, but she meant to marry him, she was sure of him, and sure of herself. She drew back with a shiver from the pleasant paths in which her thoughts had been straying, and set her feet once more in the middle of the long white road. When she went upstairs that night, she found that the late post had brought her a fresh batch of bills. Mrs. Peniston, who was a conscientious woman, had forwarded them all to Bellomont. Miss Bart, accordingly, rose the next morning with the most earnest conviction that it was her duty to go to church. She tore herself bedums from the lingering enjoyment of her breakfast tray, rang to have her gray gown laid out, and dispatched her maid to borrow a prayer book from Mrs. Treanor. But her course was too purely reasonable not to contain the germs of rebellion. No sooner were her preparations made than they roused a smothered sense of resistance. A small spark was enough to kindle Lily's imagination, and the sight of the gray dress and the borrowed prayer book flashed a long light down the years. She would have to go to church with Percy Grice every Sunday. They would have a front pew in the most expensive church in New York, and his name would figure handsomely in the list of parish charities. In a few years, when he grew stouter, he would be made a warden. Once in the winter the rector would come to dine, and her husband would beg her to go over the list and see that no divorcees were included, except those who had showed signs of penitence by being remarried to the very wealthy. There was nothing especially arduous in this round of religious obligations, but it stood for a fraction of that great bulk of boredom which loomed across her path. And who could consent to be bored on such a morning? Lily had slept well, and her bath had filled her with a pleasant glow, which was becomingly reflected in the clear curve of her cheek. No lines were visible this morning, or else the glass was at a happier angle. And the day was the accomplice of her mood. It was a day for impulse and truancy. The light air seemed full of powdered gold. Below the dewy bloom of the lawns the woodlands blushed and smoldered, and the hills across the river swam in molten blue. Every drop of blood in Lily's veins invited her to happiness. The sound of wheels roused her from these musings, and leaning behind her shutters she saw the omnibus take up its freight. She was too late, then, but the fact did not alarm her. A glimpse of Mr. Grice's crestfallen face even suggested that as he had done wisely in absenting herself, since the disappointment he so candidly betrayed would surely whet his appetite for the afternoon walk. That walk she did not mean to miss. One glance at the bills on her writing table was enough to recall its necessity. But meanwhile, as he had the morning to herself, and could muse pleasantly on the disposal of its hours. She was familiar enough with the habits of Bellomont to know that she was likely to have a free field till luncheon. As he had seen the Wetherills, the Treanor girls and Lady Cressida packed safely into the omnibus, Judy Treanor was sure to be having her hair shampooed. Carrie Fisher had doubtless carried off her host for a drive. Ned Silverton was probably smoking the cigarette of young despair in his bedroom. And Kate Corby was certain to be playing tennis with Jack Stepney and Miss Van Osburgh. Of the ladies, this left only Mrs. Dorset unaccounted for, and Mrs. Dorset never came down till luncheon. Her doctors, she averred, had forbidden her to expose herself to the crude air of the morning. To the remaining members of the party, Lily gave no special thought. Wherever they were not likely to interfere with her plans. These, for the moment, took the shape of assuming a dress somewhat more rustic and summer-like in style than the garment as he had first selected, and rustling downstairs, sunshade in hand, with the disengaged air of a lady in quest of exercise. The great hall was empty, but for the knot of dogs by the fire, who, taking in at a glance the outdoor aspect of Miss Bart, were upon her at once with lavish offers of companionship. She put aside the ramming paws which conveyed these offers, and assuring the joyous volunteers that she might presently have a use for their company, sauntered on through the empty drawing room to the library at the end of the house. The library was almost the only surviving portion of the old manor house of Bellomont. A long, spacious room, revealing the traditions of the mother country in its classically cased doors, the Dutch tiles of the chimney, and the elaborate hob grate with its shining brass urns. A few family portraits of lantern-jawed gentlemen in tie wigs, and ladies with large headdresses and small bodies, hung between the shelves lined with pleasantly shabby books. Books mostly contemporaneous with the ancestors in question, and to which the subsequent Treanors had made no perceptible additions. The library at Bellomont was in fact never used for reading, though it had a certain popularity as a smoking room, or a quiet retreat for flirtation. It had occurred to Lily, however, that it might on this occasion have been resorted to by the only member of the party in the least likely to put it to its original use. She advanced noiselessly over the dense old rug scattered with easy chairs, and before she reached the middle of the room she saw that as he had not been mistaken. Lawrence Selden was in fact seated at its farther end. But though a book lay on his knee, his attention was not engaged with it, but directed to a lady whose laced hat figure, as she leaned back in an adjoining chair, detached itself with exaggerated slimness against the dusky leather upholstery. Lily paused as she caught sight of the group. For a moment she seemed about to withdraw, but thinking better of this, she announced her approach by a slight shake of her skirts which made the couple raise their heads, Mrs. Dorset with a look of frank displeasure, and Selden with his usual quiet smile. The sight of his composure had a disturbing effect on Lily, but to be disturbed was in her case to make a more brilliant effort at self-possession. "Dear me, am I late?" she asked, putting a hand in his as he advanced to greet her. "Late for what?" inquired Mrs. Dorset tartly. "Not for luncheon, certainly, but perhaps you had an earlier engagement?" "Yes, I had," said Lily confidingly. "Really? Perhaps I am in the way, then? But Mr. Selden is entirely at your disposal." Mrs. Dorset was pale with temper, and her antagonist felt a certain pleasure in prolonging her distress. "Oh, dear, no, do stay," she said good-humoredly. I don't in the least want to drive you away. You're awfully good, dear, but I never interfere with Mr. Selden's engagements." The remark was uttered with a little air of proprietorship not lost on its object, who concealed a faint blush of annoyance by stooping to pick up the book he had dropped at Lily's approach. The latter's eyes widened charmingly, and she broke into a light laugh. "But I have no engagement with Mr. Selden. My engagement was to go to church, and I'm afraid the omnibus has started without me." "Has it started, do you know?" She turned to Selden, who replied that he had heard it drive away some time since. "Ah, then I shall have to walk. I promised Hilda and Muriel to go to church with them. It's too late to walk there, you say? Well, I shall have the credit of trying, at any rate, and the advantage of escaping part of the service. I'm not so sorry for myself, after all. And with a bright nod to the couple on whom he had intruded, Miss Bart strolled through the glass doors, and carried a rustling grace down the long perspective of the garden walk. She was taking her way churchward, but at no very quick pace, a fact not lost on one of her observers, who stood in the doorway looking after her with an air of puzzled amusement. The truth is that she was conscious of a somewhat keen shock of disappointment. All her plans for the day had been built on the assumption that it was to see her that Selden had come to Bellomont. As he had expected, when she came DOWNP62 greater than stairs, to find him on the watch for her, and as he had found him, instead, in a situation which might well denote that he had been on the watch for another lady. Was it possible, after all, that he had come for Bertha Dorset? The latter had acted on the assumption to the extent of appearing at an hour when she never showed herself to ordinary mortals, and Lily, for the moment, saw no way of putting her in the wrong. It did not occur to her that Selden might have been actuated merely by the desire to spend a Sunday out of town. Women never learn to dispense with the sentimental motive in their judgments of men. But Lily was not easily disconcerted. Competition put her on her mettle, and she reflected that Selden's coming, if it did not declare him to be still in Mrs. Dorset's toils, showed him to be so completely free from them that he was not afraid of her proximity. These thoughts so engaged her that she fell into a gait hardly likely to carry her to church before the sermon, and at length, having passed from the gardens to the wood path beyond, so far forgot her intention as to sink into a rustic seat at a bend of the walk. The spot was charming, and Lily was not insensible to the charm, or to the fact that her presence enhanced it, but she was not accustomed to taste the joys of solitude except in company, and the combination of a handsome girl and a romantic scene struck her as too good to be wasted. No one, however, appeared to profit by the opportunity, and after a half hour of fruitless waiting she rose and wandered on. She felt a stealing sense of fatigue as she walked. The sparkle had died out of her, and the taste of life was stale on her lips. She hardly knew what he had been seeking, or why the failure to find it had so blotted the light from her sky. She was only aware of a vague sense of failure, of an inner isolation deeper than the loneliness about her. Her footsteps flagged, and she stood gazing listlessly ahead, digging the ferny edge of the path with the tip of her sunshade. As she did, so a step sounded behind her, and she saw Selden at her side. "How fast you walk," he remarked. "I thought I should never catch up with you." She answered gaily, "Colin, you must be quite breathless. I've been sitting under that tree for an hour." "Waiting for me, I hope," he rejoined, and she said with a vague laugh, "Well, waiting to see if you would come. I seize the distinction, but I don't mind it, since doing the one involved doing the other. But weren't you sure that I should come? If I waited long enough, but you see I had only a limited time to give to the experiment." "Why limited? Limited by luncheon?" "No, by my other engagement." "Your engagement to go to church with Muriel and Hilda?" "No, but to come home from church with another person." "Ah, I see. I might have known you were fully provided with alternatives. And is the other person coming home this way?" Lily laughed again. "Tee, that's just what I don't know, and to find out, it is my business to get to church before the service is over." "Exactly. And it is my business to prevent your doing so, in which case the other person, piqued by your absence, will form the desperate resolve of driving back in the omnibus." Lily received this with fresh appreciation. His nonsense was like the bubbling of her inner mood. "Is that what you would do in such an emergency?" she inquired. Selden looked at her with solemnity. I am here to prove to you," he cried, "what I am capable of doing in an emergency." Walking a mile in an hour you must own, that the omnibus would be quicker. Ah, but will he find you in the end? That's the only test of success. They looked at each other with the same luxury of enjoyment that they had felt in exchanging absurdities over his tea table, but suddenly Lily's face changed, and she said, "Colin, well, if it is, he has succeeded." Selden, following her glance, perceived a party of people advancing toward them from the farther bend of the path. Lady Cressida had evidently insisted on walking home, and the rest of the churchgoers had thought it their duty to accompany her. Lily's companion looked rapidly from one to the other of the two men of the party, Wetherill walking respectfully at Lady Cressida's side with his little sidelong look of nervous attention, and Percy Grice bringing up the rear with Mrs. Wetherill and the Treeners. "Ah, now I see why you were getting up your Americana," Selden exclaimed with a note of the freest admiration, but the blush with which the sally was received checked whatever amplifications he had meant to give it. That Lily Bart should object to being bantered about her suitors, or even about her means of attracting them, was so new to Selden that he had a momentary flash of surprise, which lit up a number of possibilities. But she rose gallantly to the defense of her confusion by saying, as its object approached, "Colin, that was why I was waiting for you to thank you for having given me so many points." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.